Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And hello, everybody. Chuck Bonniewell and Julie Hayden with you today. Truth Straight Up. Chuck, broadcasting live from the world headquarters of the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle, goes to the printer tomorrow.
Writing another killer editorial against the woke state.
That's right. Against the woke state. Hey, coming up today at 3:30, we're going to be talking with Ben Murray from the Independence Institute to explain just how horrible an anti-transportation and how much money it's going to cost you, this transportation bill that's plowing its way through the Colorado legislature. He'll be talking about that. But wanted to start off talking about masks and things, and go ahead and open it up. If you're joining us on Zoom, feel free to go ahead and pop in and unmute yourself and turn your camera and your mic on and comment. Or if you want to call in, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. But, you know, Chuck,
particularly call if you're still wearing a mask.
Yeah, if you're still...
You want to hear all those people who are still wearing a mask. Please tell us why.
Exactly, because I have my theories on that. Let me tell you, I was just kind of running around doing errands and stuff. I mean, over the weekend and everything. And I know, for instance, we went out to a restaurant Friday and didn't wear masks going in, and nobody said anything. Over the weekend, we were at the club, and I would say most of the people there were not wearing masks. Maybe one or two people was all I saw. This morning, running around, I was looking, and a lot of the stores have taken the mask requirement sign down. I was at one store that did not, so I didn't go into that store. But it was funny to me, Chuck, because what I noticed is in the one store I went into, there were only six people in there, and two of us did not have masks on, but everybody else did. Was at another store where I would say maybe about a third of the people did not have masks on, but everybody else did. And to me, that's shocking. I mean, it's like, what on earth is wrong with you people? But I have my theories on why, and I'm going to explain. I have four mask categories that I'm going to talk about. But I mean, what have you noticed?
Well, I went to Lodo's last night after being up in Weld County. Well, they were shutting down. The guy walked out fully masked, and I asked him what the hell he was doing.
And he didn't have an explanation. Well, here's my
answer. Yeah, I just want to be safe. And I said, well, that's good. And, you know, I didn't say, you're a fool.
You should have robbed him. Anyway. No, I'm kidding.
You should have robbed him. Yes, you're right. Right.
So, you won't get infected, but since you're such an idiot, I'm going to rob you. No, I'm just kidding, everybody. I'm just kidding. 888-627-6008, because we want to hear your theories or your explanations. But here are my, there's four categories of people, I think. You've got the no-mask people like us. It's like the instant the prison doors were released, I like left, right? Just in case anybody was going to change their mind, don't even stay here anymore, I'm out of here. I think there are a lot of people like that. Then I think there's a second category of people who I think they're just sort of uncertain and they're polite. I mean, if you think about it, at this time last year, the CDC was still telling us we all had to wear masks. I mean, maybe you didn't if you were outside, but maybe not. Fauci was, I mean, you know, Texas and Florida were Neanderthals that were going to get everybody killed for dropping mask mandates. Fauci was saying we're going to have to wear masks forever. The CDC was saying we could be facing, you know, a doomsday situation. And then all of a sudden the next day, all that's gone. COVID's over. Not a thing anymore. No masks. And I think there are a lot of people who, over the course of the past year and a half, have listened to the CDC say goofy things, contradictory things, conflicting things. And I think there are a lot of people out there who are just going, what? You know, what are the rules? What stores are requiring it? And maybe you're thinking, you know what, I've been wearing a mask for a year and a half every day. Another couple of days won't hurt me. And then they're used to being screamed at, right? If seeing people screamed at if they don't wear a mask, and they don't want to be screamed at. But I think that number is going to dwindle rapidly. I think that those people, every time they go into another store, King Soopers, for instance, earlier today said, hey, they're not requiring masks anymore. So every time they go out, they're seeing more and more people not wearing masks, and I think that's going to make them feel comfortable. But I mean, but you had predicted that too. You said you thought stores were going to rapidly drop it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been obvious for a while that one, there are fewer and fewer COVID cases. Two, there's a vaccine. And three, the least well-known, which is amazing, is if you take ivermectin and a couple other drugs, you know, you have your chances of recovery are just enormous.
Right.
So, I mean, there it's more likely you're going to die from an iguana attack than COVID-19. And it's been that way for a while.
Well, yeah, the whole fake thing anyway, but.
Yeah, it's been a fake thing. And in general, you know, the same amount of people used to die from, quote unquote, influenza died from COVID this last time. So it's really nothing happened. No different death rate. It's no. Just called something different. It's just slightly called something different. No. So it's been a con. Some people love to be conned. Nancy Pelosi loves the power of forcing people in masks. But if you're still wearing the mask, you need psychological help. And I think the government
chief provides. That's my third category, are people who are basically need psychological help, right? The people who, for whatever reason, have gotten used to it. These are the people, the germaphobes. I mean, you know, this is their new thing. And then the fourth category, though, these are the people, this is Nancy Pelosi people. These are the virtue signalers, right? This is when, like, Kamala Harris and her husband, both vaccinated, both outside, kissed through a mask. Right.
Or David. Well, I think that's good. I think that's a good idea.
Those
shouldn't be able to do anything.
But like you're that David Ho character who says, well, he doesn't want to be mistaken for liberal. But I think those people are going to quickly be mistaken for kooks. Right. I think the vast majority of people, once they kind of get used to this, are not going to wear masks. And the people who do, I think, are going to start to feel sillier and sillier. And, you know, because we're the polite ones, we're not going to scream at them. At least I'm not going to scream at them.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to.
I think initially I was thinking it was going to take a while for this to happen. And you predicted, you said, no, it'll be by the end of the week. You said it'll be like dominoes. All the stores are going to fall. And you're right. The very first day, Walmart and Costco. The next day, Target. Today, King Supers. I think a lot of stores, like I said, driving around the shopping malls, because that's where I spend some time, most of the stores had taken the signs down. I think it's going to be a little while before they let their employees take masks off. But even that, I think, is going to happen pretty quickly.
Well, the last bastion of maskdom will be the public schools. You know, one, you know, they can torture the little kiddies, which is what Democrats like to do, adult Democrats. And moreover, the teachers' union are in shock. They may have to go to work.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not the hardest workers in the first place, but now they've gotten so used to being in Puerto Rico. So, you know, it will continue in the schools, maybe out in L.A.
Well, LA are homeless people anyway, and they're not known as rule followers, and they're kind of risk takers. So, you know, you know, speaking of schools, I know at Rev School, he goes to a charter school up here in Westminster, and frankly, I think they've done as good a job as could be expected with this kind of thing. They said, and I agree with this, that we had, with the time, I mean, we have like 7 days of school left, and they said they're just going to leave it in place because they felt to get rid of it now would be more of a distraction and more confusing than just kind of leaving it in place. But they already said, no, we're not going to do it next year. There's not going to be any remote learning next year. You know, if you don't want to come back to school, don't come back. Well, they didn't put it that way. But I mean, I was glad to see our son do that.
Well, they had AFT union president Randy Weingartner on C-SPAN. And, you know, they'd open it up and all the people, Republican, Democrat, Ellen Philia, would just scream at her.
Yeah.
The disgrace and everything else. And I think that's the thing. I mean, I think the toleration for union-backed school boards and teachers' union is about as low as it's ever been.
Right.
Well,
you know, and that brings us up. There was Tucker Carlson and Britt Hume talked about this a little bit last night. And Britt Hume mentioned the whole thing about schools and things. So, Thomas, if we could play the Tucker Carlson soundbite, please.
Well, I think you're right, Tucker, that this is a kind of a neurosis. But I think one thing that has contributed to it unquestionably has been the early going messaging on this and the way it is and the way the whole coverage of this issue has been done by the media. There's an old saying in this business, you know, Tucker, that no news is bad news, good news is dull news. And in the newspaper business, we used to say bad news makes marvelous copy. Well, bad news about the coronavirus has dominated the coverage to the exclusion of things that we've known from the beginning. I mean, from the very beginning are kind of good news, such as that little kids like young John Provenzano are largely, if not completely, invulnerable to the disease, nor are they likely to spread it. And yet the schools remain yes. closed because it was believed that the little critters were going to come in there and they're going to have the ailment and they're going to spread it to all the teachers and they're all going to die. I mean, that's, and I saw countless comments from people saying, yeah, that's fine. The kids may not get that sick, but they're going to kill other people. That was the idea. Well, there's no real science behind that. There are no studies that show that that's happening. There's nothing that shows that kids are big spreaders of the disease or that they ever get very sick with it. And yet, you know, the kids were out of school. Now they're forcing them to continue to wear masks in some places, even in Florida, which is relatively an open state. So it is a form of collective madness that is passing for many people who have wised up on this. But as what you're telling us tonight suggests, too many people haven't been able to get over it.
And I think the media, Chuck, they want to, I mean, they're kind of floundering now in terms of, well, what do we can't talk about Trump because he's gone. We panic people, because here's what I see happening, and just have noticed, it's like immediately the CDC director, rather than everybody being Neanderthals, Texas had like zero deaths. And she acknowledged that what something like only like 5% of COVID deaths were actually from COVID as opposed to with COVID. And I think now that the Biden administration has declared victory, that all of a sudden what we're going to be seeing is more numbers like that, a little bit more honest or maybe even skewed the other way. I saw another report this morning that said, oh yeah, actually kids don't get sick with COVID. The kids who we say were in the hospital with COVID, actually it was a Stanford University study, were in the hospital with all kinds of other stuff. So I think that the numbers are going to get even more encouraging, don't you?
I just have one question. Why does Brent Hume ever go on anywhere anymore? I mean, my God, he ought to be
that's a
long time ago. Well, that's an idiot.
Let's go through it, because you and I disagree a little bit about this, although I think we're kind of both right, in terms of why did this happen. I saw another poll today. Biden only has like a 35%, which means a 70%. So that 35% approval rating among independent voters in swing states. I mean, this is what I think happened. Joe Biden was like, hey, Donald Trump's an idiot. He's killing everybody. I'm going to come in and we're going to get rid of COVID. And all of a sudden, coming up on June, everyone's still wearing masks and people are annoyed about it, right? So I think his administration and the CDC decided they needed to win. He had the gas line crisis. He had a lot of people asking a lot of questions about Dr. Fauci and the origin of the whole virus. He's got Israel. He's got all kinds of bad economic news last week. And I think, as you say, I think part of it was kind of going this way anyway. But I think they said, hey, that's if we can take a crisis off the table, let's do it. So they wave their magic wand and suddenly, poof, COVID's not a deal anymore.
Now, you just don't get how hard it is to run a top-down organization when the top is totally senile. It's no different than their weird response, Israel, Hamas, you know, and there's no rhyme or reason to their jerkiness one way and then the other way. If they plan this out, then they're really in trouble, because it was the worst planned rollout ever.
Oh, no, I think it was awful.
Admitted that, oh, yeah, I was wearing the mask just for theater. You know, I mean, right. He talk about somebody who's gone from sort of well-admired to thought of as just a senile little evil man,
right.
Fauci. So no, and that poor woman who's the head of the CDC now, who's telegenic, but, you know, she's no genius. And so everything is just exposed. They just haven't been able to put a patina over it that looks normal or good.
But I don't think they're going to go back, though. I mean, that's why I think all of a sudden we're going to start seeing better numbers. What did they see? 15 states had zero deaths, right? Now, they would have never said that last week. They would have found some guy who was, you know, murdered, and they would, but had COVID or at least tested positive with one of those, you know, false positive tests and say, oh, he died of COVID. I think that the Biden administration is not going to go backward on this, don't you think?
Well, I think the Biden administration doesn't know where it's going. I mean, once again, if you're senile, you don't really You know, and there's nobody who absolutely can give an order. I mean, maybe Susan Rice can, but no one's sure. So everything just kind of hinkles the way down and they're off. And, you know, he got caught pretending he was driving a car while someone else was the steering wheel, which was a great allegory for his whole administration, right?
Yeah. And who was that person? It was like the intern. Although that might raise a question, too. Can you see in our relationship, why would anyone make a car with two steering wheels? I mean, can you see if we had in either one of our cars two steering wheels? That would be a disaster. Everyone would be, the roads would be tough, and COVID would be nothing compared to the highways. Who would build a car with two steering wheels?
I wonder if it was Susan Rice who had the other steering wheel, but it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And here in Colorado, who knows what the rules are? I mean, I guess they're all off. But you know, the hideous people from Tri-County and elsewhere now can go back into their cave, exposing themselves as being just awful human beings. It's unclear whether Polis will ever give up his emergency powers. They don't seem to ever go away.
He still has, right? The crisis is over. Biden and MSNBC have declared it over. And yet Polis still has his emergency powers. I'm not sure. You're right. Hopefully we'll get Patrick on Friday and we can ask about that. But I think he's not. Here's my question to you. And if people, 888-627-6008, the one thing that when I stop and think about this, it's really alarming to me is how easily we were all conned and then how easily we were all pressured into wearing the stupid masks and going along with the con. And I think there are some of us who will not be fooled again, but it is alarming to me, particularly alarming to me, to see all these people still wearing the mask, right? Waiting for permission. Rather than saying, hey, look, this is stupid. I don't need to wear this mask anyway. So I'm only going to put it on if somebody tells me to, or afraid that some stranger next to them in the grocery store line is going to start screaming at them. I mean, it's scary to me and concerning to me how quickly and how easily everybody became just sheep or lemmings, right? Willing to jump off the cliff if that's what they told us to do.
Well, they wisely did it. They started out, if you remember, back in March, 2 week period to flatten the curve. And most people said, well, okay, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, I'll wear a mask, you know, limit my travel and all that. And then a year and a half later, you're still sitting there with Fauci and all the rest of them going, this is insanity. You give them an inch. You give them an inch and they'll destroy everything. They will destroy everything.
I mean, you look at the businesses that were destroyed, the Fresh Fish Company that isn't around anymore. Some of the videos we played where the health department people went in and they were destroying the guy's business and finding him and suing them and closing him down. That restaurant, some up in the, you know, in the foothills outside of Boulder where they seized all of their alcohol. I mean, you got to wonder what's going to happen with those places. And, you know, now all of a sudden, oh, it's all over. Okay, nothing to see here. Move on. Hopefully this will lead to an increased distrust of government. And it'll be much harder for them to do this again. But sometimes I worry about that, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think we're doomed. But other than that, it's all good.
Anyway, that's what I didn't tell you this. Michael Tao, folks who watch our show, Michael Tao, longtime investigative columnist. I told him that you thought you were all doomed. He goes, oh, well, he's right. And then he listed all these reasons to make you, in case you guys hadn't thought of this, there are more reasons. But we'll get him on. He's working on a major investigative piece about Fauci and all of that kind of stuff. So, well, we'll see. Hopefully by this time next week, when we're on again on Wednesday, there'll be way more people not wearing masks.
Well, it's getting hotter and hotter, and it's going to be summer pretty soon. And wear your mask in summer. You have to be a real masochist.
That's right. Well, you're mentally ill. Well, let me switch gears. There was something else that was kind of fun. And you've got some of the commercials to play. So an organization called, it's a consumer advocacy group. Now, I read a column that made it seem as if it was nonpartisan. I'm kind of skeptical about that. But they do, it's consumer research, it's called. They are slapping back at some of these woke corporations. And I want to play with some commercials explaining why these woke corporations are going so woke. Oh, but before we do this, we got Barney. Hey, Barney, are you wearing your mask so you don't transmit COVID over the phone lines to Chuck and myself?
No, and probably when I start yelling, I'll probably be spitting all over the place like a drill sergeant, so sorry.
That's all right.
But, okay, it's time. Chuck, can you hear me?
I can. Is Chuck perfectly.
Okay. So, I'm sitting here and I keep thinking about who we're going to run for governor. If Donald Trump can be president, we can get a guy like Steve Reams off his ass. I think he'd make a perfect governor. Little bit of an a-hole, not going to take any shit off of anybody. It's time to get him off his ass, get him motivated. 20 years ago, I told him he needs to get off his ass or I'll punch him, but I don't think I could get away with it now. But we got to get somebody like Steve Reams. By the way, I argued with my dumbass liberal sister from Denver to Fort Collins about the COVID and all the liberal crap. So they're real big. Sorry, Julie, but you know how liberal women are. They always go back to abortion. You don't have a right to tell me what to do with my body. So let me get this straight. A woman can decide to cut a little baby out of her and flush it down the incinerator, but I can't tell you I'm not wearing your flipping mask. It's my body. Why doesn't it, just like with their stupid-ass Obama Affordable Care Act, why do the mandates and all these laws, why it's okay for the government to tell me to do what I want with my body? I don't know. The mask thing, I'll tell you, like Chuck says, I might be delusional, but you are flipping off the charts, stupid and delusional if you're still wearing a mask, with all due respect to all the people that just don't get it. Anyway,
well,
the mask thing really
your,
pisses me off.
Well, let me ask you about your earlier point about Steve Reams for governor, right? Are you in some kind of fairyland or something? Do you believe you live in a Democratic state or Democratic Republican state?
No,
you believe
no,
there's actually
no.
Free and fair elections? I mean, it is so crooked and it is so overwhelmingly crooked. No one has a chance to beat Governor Polis because you don't live in democracy. They just print up the bills in Denver. They get such a huge number. Anybody who runs for statewide office other than in the Democratic primary, you'd have a chance there. It's eluding themselves. We're about to come up with this, talk about this transportation bill, endlessly rejected by the voters and various propositions and everything else. And the legislature feels just fully enabled and without fear of any retribution of just ignoring it all. I've just gone, you want to vote on tax raises? F you. You guys don't want increased taxes for roads? F you. You guys don't want fees for roads or otherwise? F you. I'm the legislature and the governor are dictators. You do not live in a democracy. You just simply do not.
Damn it, Chuck, you just took the winds right out of my freaking sails. Thanks a lot, buddy. Thanks a lot.
You gotta have
it would be nice to, it'd be nice to kind of, and you're right, Chuck, but I'm guessing that the old turd is going to be gone, and it is going to kind of be up for grabs, so I think Polis has a big enough head that he thinks he can be president. I really do think that, and I think that's where he's going. They're going to whole shot him. I don't know. Maybe not, but I don't know.
I think Jared Polis very much thinks he could be president. And I think he's not, delusional about that at all. I think Jared Polis is
right. If an 80-year-old senile man can become president, anyone can.
They won't even have to cheat with Polis. I mean, he's a perfect candidate. No. You know, they won't even have to cheat with him. He might really be able to do it legitimately. So, anyway,
yeah,
I have been catching you guys. I haven't called in, but I do catch you sometimes. I've just had a rough couple of weeks, but everything's all good now. So, we'll tell you another day. It was kind of, thought I had a major health issue.
Are you okay?
I think we're okay. And no, it wasn't a freaking heart attack. So.
All right. I'll text you later and make sure you're okay. It's good to hear from you, Bob.
All right, I'm good. You too. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Love you guys. Bye.
Love you, Barney. Ben Murray coming up in a second. But real quick, I want to play these ads that I was starting to talk about. So these are people slapping back at these woke companies trying to tell us what to do. So if we could, Thomas, go ahead and play the American Airlines ad, please.
bags, rated the worst. Losing the most bags, shrinking legroom during COVID. American requires passengers to show ID to fly, but attacks Texas's popular voter ID law. Why is CEO Doug Parker trying to appease the radical left to distract from billions in taxpayer bailouts, from his $10 million payday, from Americans' record layoffs? Doug Parker, American Airlines, serve your customers, not woke politicians.
And one play later, they did the same thing to Coca-Cola and Nike, basically exposing all of the corruption from them and saying that, you know, maybe they need to be dealing with that. I see Ben Murray is there. So we got Ben with the Independence Institute. And Ben, if you want to go ahead, we'll bring you on up. You can unmute yourself. And wanted to talk about the transportation bill, or as Dave Williams called it on our show the other day, the anti-transportation bill. I mean, I see we got Sherry from Lakewood. So Sherry, if you want to hang on for a second. But Ben, thank you for your time today and all the work you've been doing trying to stop this monstrosity.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. Thanks for having me on. I think he hit it right on the head with that, the anti-transportation bill. Could call it a lot of other things too, but yeah, you know what they're doing here. I could, there's a lot I could say, so I'll let you kick us off on kind of where you want to start. But, you know, I think voters are going to wrap
up. I'd like to start with the fact that as I was talking to Barney, whether it's Proposition 108, 109 last year, or Proposition CC the year before, or you can just go down the litmus test, the Colorado voters have said, well, do not want to increase taxes for roads. We do not want fees hidden, taxes hidden as fees for amounts. And they ignore them all. They violate everyone. They just say, oh, okay, we'll divide it up into four different enterprise zones. And one other is not an enterprise zone. And so they could care less about what the voters feel and believe. And I'd like to know why you think they don't care.
Why don't they care? Because I think there's really one goal when it comes down to it, and that is expanding their power and expanding government. I mean, you see this over and over, right? I did a piece a while back where I was looking at the quote unquote fair tax and our tax code here in Colorado, and the left likes to talk about how our tax code is so unfair and it's regressive. And they're right. If you look at the overall nature of our tax code, it's regressive, right? Their solution to this, however, is always to make it less regressive by increasing total tax revenues. So when I say, well, you know, we can make our tax code less regressive by simply reducing the taxes that are regressive, right? So why don't we just reduce property taxes? Why don't we reduce sales taxes? Why don't we reduce gas taxes? All those things would make our tax code less regressive, more fair for the poor. Oh, no, we can't do that. We can't do that. Well, why not? Well, they won't say this, but the answer to that is it would shrink government, you know? And so then you look at the policies that the left actually supports on taxes. Is sure, they'd love to take our income tax and make it a graduated progressive income tax. They would love to make the tax code more progressive by doing that, right? It turns out our flat income tax here in Colorado is actually effectively progressive. And I could get into why that is. But so what the left says, well, we need to take our only tax that's actually effectively progressive and make it even more progressive, incidentally increasing total tax revenues to the government. And when you say, well, why don't we just eliminate the sales tax? That would make our tax code more progressive. Oh, no, that would reduce revenues. We can't do that. In fact, what you see is when it comes down to it, when Democrats have the choice between reducing state revenues, okay, total state revenues, and having to be more responsible with what they have to make our tax code more fair, quote unquote fair by their standards, or increasing government revenues by increasing regressive taxes, they always choose to increase taxes on the poor and middle class in order to create more government revenues. Right. And that's really, and I say that for a reason, because this gas tax, all the taxes or fees, they're taxes, but they're calling them fees. All the fees in this whole bill are regressive. They're taxing the poor to pay for electric vehicles for high earners.
Right. Well,
I'll give you a choice here. Let me say this, Julie. I mean, I've been around politics for a long time, and the Democrats are always somewhat constrained about what they wanted to do by the fact they felt they might be voted out and they wouldn't be in control anymore. They might lose the House or the Senate or the governorships. In talking to Democrats, none of them believe they'll ever lose control of Colorado ever again, ever. It does not matter. Now, you can take one of two beliefs on that. You can believe that, like some do, that the demographics of Colorado has changed so that we are just a deep blue state by the nature of the voting pool. Or you can believe that with mail-in ballots and ballot harvesting, they've rigged the system, particularly in places like Denver, so they can't lose. But it's one of the two. You get your choice, because none of them believe they will ever be out of power again, ever. They do not believe that, that democracy, quote-unquote, works, that they can add tons of fees and taxes and gun laws and everything else, and they cannot be removed from office. So which of the two do you think it is? Do you think it's the system that has become unbelievably rigged, and I believe that's true, or the demographics have changed such that the voters are deeply committed Democrats no matter what?
Well, Chuck, I don't think you're going to like my answer to that, because I'm probably going to dodge the question. Just, you know, I would love to opine on politics, but in my role, I really need to focus on the policy. But I will say this, that when you look at the policies in this bill, when you look at Senate Bill 260, this transportation bill, you know, it sure as heck doesn't look to me like the Democrats care much what voters think or what voters say. And if you do that, if you do that forever, it seems to me that if people are paying attention, which is a big if people are paying attention, it seems to me that that would ultimately lead to losing power.
That will go on to something else. But no, they do not believe they will ever lose power. That's why they're doing it. Before, they would, you know, compromise here, compromise there. They would take things off so it wasn't quite so clear that they didn't care what the voters think. They don't care what the voters think because they can never believe they can ever lose. This is like being in the Soviet Union, or I used to go to school in Franco's Spain. I mean, there is ever going to be a change in government, ever.
It appears that way, right? I mean, if you just look at what they're doing, policy-wise, it looks like they think that what voters think doesn't matter. They're somehow immune to voter sentiment because voters don't like this bill. Voters don't like increasing all these fees. Voters have said over and over and over, we want you to ask our permission before you do this kind of stuff. And they're pretty much just giving the middle finger to Colorado.
Yep.
I agree.
Let me ask you this. How much of it, too, because I know, and Chuck and I agree with you there, and Ben, thank you for not dodging the question, actually, but how much of this, because I do think people need to know what's in this so-called transportation bill. How much of it, because I think people think, well, you know, roads are bad. I was driving down Federal. Certainly somebody needs to pick the potholes there, right? But how much of the, what is it, 4.3 or 5 point something bazillion dollars that they're going to be taxing us now? How much of it actually goes to fixing roads?
So I can't give a definitive answer to that question because it's not in the bill and it's not in the fiscal note. You can kind of parse it out. What Senator Ray Scott has said is, I don't want to quote him wrong, but I think I jotted it down here. But I've seen something like 18%. I've seen something like, let me see if I can find it right here.
Okay, yeah, go ahead. Well, you
I've seen various numbers, and part of it depends on just how agencies allocate the money and this and that, right? I'll say this, that when I look at the bill and look at the enterprises that are created and the funds that the money is going into, looks like the vast majority of it is going to electric vehicle subsidies,
yes,
electric vehicle infrastructure, public transportation, and other what they call multimodal. What does multimodal mean? Basically, other types of bike trails, right? But it can be public transport, it can be trains, it can be bike trails and walking paths. As far as I could tell in this bill, there are no fees on walking paths. So those people aren't, you know.
That's this time. Next year, we'll get around to that.
but what's clear is that what people really want is their roads and bridges to be fixed. And maybe, I don't know, I haven't seen the polling on it, but you know, maybe they would stomach a gas tax increase or something if they knew that all of that money was actually going to go to fix roads and bridges. Maybe, I don't know. They, you know, so far they've actually said no to that. We've had multiple propositions right. in the past.
Well, here's the thing too, I would point out, people might've been thinking about that under Trump when gas was like $2.39 a gallon, right? But now gas is over $3 a gallon. I mean, at the little corner gas station where we get gas, right? And I think that, I mean, what's the gas tax is something like 20 cents already anyway? I mean, it's enormously
22
high.
22 cents, yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. When you look at it and it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, it's one thing to raise gas tax when gas prices are the lowest they've been in decades, but when gas prices are the highest they've been, with no sign under the Biden administration that it's going to go down, I mean, that in particular to me is an insult. I mean, they're raising taxes. I mean, they're totally screwing the middle class. And because, and then let me ask you this. So when you raise the gasoline tax in Colorado, that means the trucks that fuel up, that drive the food to the grocery store, right, have to pay more. So then the prices at the gas, at the grocery store are higher. That means the stores that, or the trucks that haul stuff back and forth to whatever store you're shopping at, those prices, am I right there? I mean, there's a massive trickle up effect in all of this.
Oh, of course, yeah. Anytime you increase transportation fees or costs, the cost of everything goes up typically.
So yeah, so they hide it under a transportation fee. It's only that. It's like, no, it's going to affect all of us, I think. And like you said, if you want an electric car, I guess that's great. But why don't they tax electric cars? If, you know.
So actually, that's maybe the one thing in this bill that I agree with is they're finally making electric vehicles pay. I won't say their fair share, but pay something. It's still less than their fair share. And, you know, they're still using a ton of the money from this to subsidize electric vehicles, and electric vehicle owners have been getting subsidies from the state of Colorado for years. So it certainly doesn't all balance out, but at least in this bill, they're making a little step towards making EV owners pay something, because they are doing an EV registration fee, you know, on top of the regular vehicle registration fee.
The problem I have with it. Oh, go ahead, Chuck.
Well, you know, it's going to pass and the governor's going to sign it. We can call all your representatives you want to. They're not taking phone calls anymore. And I don't believe they have to take phone calls. So the question is, there's only two routes to defeat this. One, by the courts. But then again, every active judge in Colorado has been appointed by a Democratic governor. And two, put a proposition that would vitiate the Senate bill. Certainly talk over the Independence Institute is very good about issue advocacy of getting something on the ballot to destroy, to turn this over.
So unfortunately they've put an emergency clause in on this bill, which means that voters cannot essentially veto it through referendum. Voters cannot put it on the ballot. So not only is the legislature not putting it on the ballot themselves like they should, it should be referred to the ballot because they're creating all these new taxes or fees. But they went a step further and they put an emergency clause in there so that even voters, if they want to, can't put it on the ballot themselves.
If it's an emergency, it basically means it goes into effect immediately. It doesn't wait until a certain period of time.
Oh, but it also
that
means,
doesn't mean
it also means it's not
you can never.
It also means it's not subject to referendum. Now you can also do other things to kind of get around that, right? You could put a gas tax decrease on the ballot. So you could say, okay, you want to increase our gas fee by $8.08 a gallon? Okay, well, we'll just put an initiative on the ballot that decreases the gas tax by 8 cents a gallon.
You know, that's a good idea.
And decreases the fees for the other ones.
Yeah, I mean, that's an example of the sort of thing you can do. And I think we should be doing that. Kind of.
I think. Well, let me ask you too, Ben. You know, you wanted to talk about this. So I'm going to just ask you an open-ended question. What other kinds of stuff? I mean, what is it that you think people, because I think, unfortunately, Chuck is right. It's probably going to be signed and it's going to be our fate. But what do you want people to understand and to know about this anti-transportation bill?
Well, a number of things. Number one is you're delusional if you think this money is going to go to fix roads and bridges. Don't be shocked when 10 years from now, they're coming back, or even 5 years from now, they're coming back to us. I say 10 years because this is about a 10-year spending bill.
Okay.
It's going to spend about $5.3 billion over 10 years. $3.8 billion of that is coming from new fees, right? So the vast majority of it. Now, one thing I think is important to point out is that, in fact, I just published a piece on this in Complete Colorado yesterday.
Okay.
And I was looking, doing some research on all this, and I went and I found last year, Colorado Senate Democrats drafted a letter to Mitch McConnell in the U.S. Senate. And this is during the whole debate over state bailout money and all this, and McConnell didn't want to sign off on all the state bailout money. And Colorado Senate Democrats sent a letter to McConnell saying, you need to give states bailout money because of this pandemic and we're all in dire straits, which obviously we know not to be true now in hindsight. But at the time, they were in dire straits. But here's what's interesting. The only specific spending priority the Senate Democrats highlighted in their petition to McConnell was the need to fix crumbling infrastructure.
Ah.
That was the only thing they specifically said they needed the money for. Now, here's what's interesting. Anytime a politician does something like that or a political party does something like sending a petition, yeah, sure, they're advocating for policy change. But really what they're doing more than anything is making a campaign pitch to their voters, right? We all know that. So they were implicitly making two campaign pitches when they wrote that petition last year. They said, number one, they said, send Democrats to D.C., put Democrats in power in D.C., and they'll give states bailout money, okay? They're making that pitch to voters. Well, that actually worked out. Democrats got power in D.C., and they sent $350 billion in bailout money to states that don't need it, okay? And then number two, they were making the implicit pitch, keep us in power here in Colorado, and we will use that bailout money to fund roads and bridges.
Yeah.
Okay? So fast forward a year, Democrats get power in D.C. They send $3.9 billion to Colorado as part of that American Rescue Plan Act. And then Colorado Senate Democrats, exactly the same people who wrote that petition asking for money, they turn around and you would think they would use that $3.9 billion to pay for roads and bridges, right?
Right.
No, they increased fees by $3.8 billion so that you can pay for the roads and bridges.
What they do with the money? I mean, you're right. It's just a shell game. Who knows? I have more electric cars and stuff like that. It's like, well, let me... What, and I guess this is the question. I mean, Charlene was asking this in the comments. She says, what this is she said, it's just more pork under the cover of transportation. But what's the solution? I mean, but because I know you write a lot in Complete Colorado and Page 2 and things like that. That's where folks can go and read you. What, I mean, if you had, maybe not a magic wand, a lightning bolt or something like that. I mean, what do you see as possible solutions?
Well, I think what should have been done is we should have used as much of the federal stimulus money as we could to fix our roads and bridges. And yeah. We shouldn't be spending money to subsidize electric vehicles and electric vehicle infrastructure and everything else like that. Look, if the free market decides in the future, if people through the free market decide that they want widespread adoption of electric vehicles and all that, then the infrastructure necessary for electric vehicles should get the same equal proportional treatment to any other type of infrastructure funded through public funds. That's fine.
Right.
But
right.
This is, you're talking about, and I don't remember the exact numbers on this, but you're talking about maybe 1% of drivers or less who drive right. electric vehicles, and they're getting the lion's share of the funding.
Right.
And, right. And the people who tend to drive electric vehicles are upper middle class and wealthy people.
Right. Well, and most of them, I read a survey that said, and most of them actually go back to buying a gas vehicle once they've got their subsidy and they're done with it, because it's such a pain to drive an electric vehicle. So, although I'll tell you a funny story, and you're right, you do have to be rich. My son, who's 10, he and his friends have been, they like Teslas, right? He's not into the electric, not electric, but he was saying that if he were to work at Chick-fil-A, because they pay $15 an hour for 10 hours a day, 7 days a week for a year, he could buy the cheapest Tesla. And it's like, so there you go. And I'm like, or you could just wait and you could buy a used Subaru, or something like that. It's like,
right.
It's just such a scam. So you're like, Chuck, there is no hope then, huh? We're kind of...
Well, I mean, on this bill, Democrats have made it clear that they're not interested in listening to anybody on this. They're not listening,
right.
They're interested in listening to voters. They're not interested in listening to Republicans. Look, I mean, Republicans offered reasonable amendments. Senator Lindeen offered an amendment to eliminate that emergency clause. And that was rejected by Democrats. Democrats don't want this to go to the voters. In the full Senate, Lundeen offered an amendment that would put it on the ballot. Democrats talk about what great support this bill has. And so Lundeen said, okay, well, let's go stick it on the ballot then. All Democrats voted against it. They don't want to be accountable to voters.
Right.
And Republicans offered amendments to set $2 trillion aside from that $3.9 trillion the Fed sent us and use $2 trillion for funding this bill instead of new fees and stuff. Democrats rejected it. I mean, it's clear that Democrats have no interest in listening to the other side. We passed the bipartisan transportation bill in 2018. And what that would have done is funded transportation through bonds rather than new fees and new taxes. And that was this bipartisan bill, and it had to go to voters for approval under Tabor. And Democrats, it actually passed on a bipartisan basis, but then Democrats would never let it go to the ballot, right? And that was back when Republicans had the Senate and Democrats had the House. And so they had to do this sort of bipartisan negotiation. But then Democrats got power, wouldn't let it go to the ballot. And now they've just completely thrown that bipartisan bill out the window and replaced it with this thing that they're shoving down our throats in a completely partisan manner.
Well, and to me, I think, too, one of the things they're doing, we see the Democrats do this more and more, particularly in Colorado, is they're trying to social engineer us, I think. They don't want us to drive cars. They're happy, I think, that gas prices are so high because they're like, see, you all need electric vehicles. I mean, ignoring the fact that they need some sort of fuel to make the electric vehicles in the first place. I mean, don't you see that as part of it, too? It doesn't have anything to do with transportation. It has everything to do with trying to force us to live the way they think we should live.
Absolutely. You know, I was listening to the Senate Finance Committee hearing on this bill, and Senator Lundeen, again, raised this question. He does a great job. He raised this question about regressivity, and he asked his Democrat colleagues, he said, are you comfortable that this is a very regressive tax and that your transportation priorities are being funded on the backs of Colorado's poorest residents, essentially, right? So people making under $10,000 a year. This is according to Colorado Department of Revenue data, right? So people making under $10,000 a year pay 10 times more as a proportion of their income in gas fees and taxes than people making over $500,000 a year.
Wow.
Right? So it's 10 times more of a burden for the poorest Coloradans than the wealthiest Coloradans. And Senator Lundeen just asked the witnesses at the committee hearing and the Democrats, are you comfortable with this? And they basically gave two answers. One of them talked about climate change and how transportation pollution hurts the lowest income communities. So I guess the answer is tax them to help them with the problem that they don't want solved and certainly don't want solved with their own money. And, right. You know, pat them on the head and say it's for your own good, but we're not going to ask your permission to do this, you know. But the other piece of the answer they gave and they kind of said it in a roundabout way, but they essentially said, this bill actually helps the poor. And the reason why it helps the poor is because it funds things like, you know, it funds alternative transportation, public transit, that sort of a thing, bike trails, whatever. And really what they're saying is, this is back to your social engineering thing, right? Mm-hmm. Let's tax the form of transportation that currently works for Colorado's low income and middle class residents, which is, you know, fuel injected vehicles. That's what works for people. Let's tax that and discourage it through taxation. It's a carrot and stick, right? You want more of something? Subsidize it. You want less of something? Tax it. And so what they're doing is they're taxing the thing they want less of, which is fuel injected vehicle use, right? And then they're giving this sort of carrot incentive to take public transit by subsidizing that. And so really what they're doing is they're saying the free market, they're saying, look, we recognize that under the free market system, low income people and middle class people have decided that fuel injected vehicles work best for them. But we know better. We're smarter than the average person. And so what we're going to do is create a tax to make it harder to choose that option, but then create subsidies to make it easier to choose public transit as an option. And they pretty much straight up admitted that that's what they're doing. You're using a sort of a carrot and stick to force people off the roads onto public transit and other modes of transportation.
Which, as you said, look what's going on with the RTD and light rail. They clearly don't want that. Hey, well, Ben, listen.
Let me ask you this. What do you think are the possible legal challenges to this law?
I think that the Democrats have crossed their T's and dotted their I's, and the Supreme Court has set very bad precedents against Tabor, and I think they're going to get away with it, quite frankly. I mean, I'll leave all that to the lawyers. Maybe there's a lawyer somewhere out there thinking up a good case. My guess, based on what's happened in the past, is if people on the right, if limited government folks do bring up a case, we're likely to just set a new bad precedent against ourselves because, that's what's happened every time in the past. We've brought up reasonable precedent, brought up legal objections. But I don't know. Based on past court precedents, I think that the Democrats have kind of checked their boxes here. unfortunately.
Yeah, well, it, you know, you can check all the boxes you want, and a court can throw it out. But when the court is so biased in favor of Democrats, they're not going to. There's always two sides to any legal case, and you certainly can make good arguments about violating Taborin's spirit and everything else. But as you indicated, you have a court of all Democrats who hates Tabor in and of itself. So,
look, well, Chuck, let me give you the answer I think you're looking for, right?
Okay.
Thomas Jefferson wrote I don't know if it was a letter, but he wrote something called "Who Are the Best Keepers of the People's Liberties?" Okay.
Uh-huh.
Pretty famous little letter he wrote. Who are the best keepers of the people's liberties? And his answer was the people themselves. You know, the people themselves, basically. The answer to this problem is the final safeguard in a republic, which is elections.
We don't have elections.
Well, it's like
New York City under Boss Tweed that you ought to have some elections, but Boss Tweed won every time until he got put in jail. You don't have elections in Colorado.
Well,
they don't respect them.
Well,
I'm just saying, it's like the Soviet Union. They had elections. Soviet Union had elections. They said, well, why don't you vote out Khrushchev? Hey, you guys ought to vote out Khrushchev. Well, you have the same chance of voting out Democrats as they had of voting out Khrushchev in the Soviet Union. So when Jefferson is talking about it, unless he's talking about a revolution or something.
I'll wane philosophical with you here for a minute, since that seems to be the direction you're going. The ultimate safeguard built into a Republican system, right? If the Republican system is working properly, the ultimate safeguard is the vote, the people, right? Which requires people paying attention. So that's one reason why I'm on your show, and one reason I think it's important to be talking about this.
Right.
But if you really want to wane philosophical here, the ultimate safeguard granted to us by our creator is the right to revolution. And our founders, you know, they use that safeguard. God forbid that's ever necessary. But if you really want to be philosophical about it, if you believe that the ultimate safeguard that's built into the system, which is elections, if you believe that's broken, then there's really only one safeguard logically left. I'm not saying that's where we're at. I don't know. I'm just being philosophical here, but it sounds like that's kind of where you're at.
Jefferson said that the tree of liberty has to be re-nourished by the blood of tyrants.
I'm the policy guy here. I'm not the local philosophy.
Not the military strategist.
I'm just pointing out. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not advocating for that sort of thing. I'm just pointing out
that,
you know, I'm just pointing out that if elections don't work, then you know, we're in a bad place. So I'd like to think that Coloradans can still wake up, see what's going on, see that their legislators aren't listening to them, and put someone in power who will listen to them.
All right, listen, and on that, we do have to go. Chuck, we got to go. Ben, thank you. You've been great.
Great talking to you. Great discussing all the issues with you.
All right. Thanks, you guys. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, thank you. Yep. Yeah, Charlene has been weighing in too. And she said, at least he acknowledges that. Guys, we run out of time. So Sherry and some of the people who called, please call back Friday. We'll squeeze you in Friday. We have an update. Mark Poff, our former El Paso County Sheriff Investigator, you've heard us talk a lot about the Tom Clements case, some pretty interesting corruption information coming out about prosecutors involved in that hoax kerfuffle and a lawsuit that that John St. Augustine with the El Paso County Sheriff Department has exposed. And also, I think we'll try to get Patrick Neville on to see, Chuck, when, if ever, you know, Tick Data Polis can release his controls over us. Hey, want to thank Thomas, want to thank everybody. And again, we'll get all the phone calls in Friday that we didn't get in today. Thank you to Ben Murray. Chuck, continue working hard at the paper. That will do it for us on this Wednesday. We'll see everybody on Party Friday.
Bye-bye, everybody.